Hello, dear friends. Greg Kokel here, host of Stand to Reason, and looking forward to chatting with you or about ideas or something, not about you personally, but about the ideas that you have, the questions that you oppose, either live by calling in or by the open mic calls, which we often use. The call-in number, 855-243-9975. I used to give that number all the time because I was doing live radio on the weekends. People listening in their vehicles or wherever can, at home, they could call in. But now I guess we have quite a few people that are listening by live streaming one way or another. And so if you want to call in, 855-243-9975. We have people getting in the queue already because they know that our live show is on Tuesdays from 4 p.m. until 6 p.m. Pacific time. And if you want to talk to me on the show directly, this is where you call, 855-243-9975. If you're outside the U.S., the number's different, 562-424-8229. That's 462-424-8229. We get international calls on occasion. There was one show we got calls from four different continents in one afternoon. That was pretty cool. But it's not like our domestic calls. So I want to read something, the latest about famous atheist Richard Dawkins. For some reason, I started out to say Christopher, which would be Hitchens, and then I couldn't get Richard. But I looked at the text, and there it was. Richard Dawkins, maybe, arguably, the most famous atheist, qua atheist, in the world. There might be other atheists that are more famous, but not for being atheists, but for being political figures that people know all about, and they happen to be atheists. But Dawkins is the most famous atheist, qua atheist. In virtue of being an atheist, he's famous because he's written a number of books promoting Darwinistic evolution, which is pretty much the only option that you have if you're a naturalist when it comes to the development of life on Earth and the biological diversity of life on Earth. He's written so many books, translated in so many different languages, famously, The God Delusion and The Selfish Gene and books like that. So he's campaigning as an atheist. But I want to use what he's just said recently, which is very interesting, to expand on a broader notion. I'm just going to call it entailment. All right? So think of the statement, my brother is an only child. Okay? Now, that's a silly statement. We know that is false. It's self-refuting. Because the notion of having a brother entails that you're not an only child, okay? There's at least two, maybe more. But if you have a brother and you are the child, then there's two children, at least in the family. You get it. Doesn't need a lot of explanation. But there are lots of things like that where one point of view entails something else that it rests upon, that it presumes to be true in order for your statement either to be coherent or obviously incoherent, like my brother is an only child. The idea of brother canceled out the possibility of only one child in the family. So that notion entails something that contradicts the statement. And this notion of entailment is very, very important when it comes to understanding worldviews. Think, for example, about atheism just in general. In fact, in Street Smarts, which turns out to be my general apologetics book, Zondervan was after me for a few years about writing something like that. I said, why would I write a general apologetics book? Everybody else has already done this, probably better than I could do. And then it occurred to me I could write one built around the foil of the tactical game plan and expand it that way so it added a unique detail to it. And so I did that with Street Smarts. So But when I came to the chapters, and I have two chapters that are directly about atheism and two more that are indirectly about atheism, because they deal with the issue of the problem of evil and the existence of objective morality to ground the problem of evil. All right. When I started that chapter on atheism, I did so, and I explained why, because that is the dividing point for everything that follows with regards to worldviews. If you are an atheist, if you believe there is no God, or as some will put it now, if you lack a belief in God, which is kind of a tricky way of putting it, the fact is they lack a belief in God, but they don't have, but they don't lack a belief about God. The belief that they have about God is that there is no God. He doesn't exist, and therefore they lack a belief in God. In any event, if that's your view, that there is no God, a whole bunch of particulars about the nature of reality follow from that. If there is no God, and this is characteristically the case with people who are naturalists, or I should say physicalists or materialists, on their view, the only thing that exists is the material world accessible by the five senses. God is not, by definition, part of the material world. Therefore, God can't exist by definition of materialism and naturalism. Okay? And if the world just is the way atheistic, naturalistic, materialistic people say it is, then all we have is molecules in motion. And that is the short of it, and that is also the long of it. That is where their story begins, and that's where it ends, because there is nothing else in their story. And the problem here regarding entailment is that nothing else is substantively entailed in the idea that we are molecules in motion. You want to talk about morality, any deep morality? Any profound understanding of right and wrong in the objective sense, that's not molecules in motion. If you want to talk about human rights, which is a subcategory of morality, rights are moral claims. All rights claims are moral claims. People have things to them, and we have a moral obligation to give them to them. That's what rights are, a just claim to something, a claim based on justice. Not just a claim to something, which is the way a lot of people treat morality. Rights. We're just going to claim it for ourselves, all right? But the problem is nothing like human rights has a home in a merely materialistic universe. So the entailment issue applies across the board to a whole bunch of things that people are aware of for some reason, maybe because the things they're aware of are real, or maybe because they're fantasies or they're wishful thinking, but they are aware of them. And one of the things we're aware of is right and wrong. And another thing we're aware of is the problem of evil, and these are connected. But of course, if you are an atheist and it's just molecules in motion, that worldview does not entail the possibility of immaterial objective moral truth, and also does not entail the possibility of objective moral rights, right things being violated and thus resulting in evil. And this is why I titled the chapter in Street Smarts regarding this issue, Evil, Atheism's Fatal Flaw. There is no room for objective evil in an atheistic, materialistic, naturalistic worldview. It is not entailed by it. It doesn't fit there. There is nothing that grounds it. It doesn't make any sense. So then one has to figure out, well, since we have these notions of good and evil, right and wrong, morality, etc., where did these notions, which don't have any connection to the real world, which can't possess these things because they're not material, where do these notions inside of us come from? And this is where the Darwinian model is pressed into service to explain. moral motions. That's the way Francis Schaeffer described them, and even moral content. Okay. Now, I have a whole chapter dealing with that in Street Smarts because I don't think it works. No, that's not strong enough. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Because what Darwinian evolution can do, only do, if it can create beliefs in us, which I don't think is the case, it can only create false beliefs about morality in the world, since on the view, there is no morality in the world. It's not entailed in that view. Now, by contrast, a person who is a theist, and I'm not arguing right now which one is true and which one is false. I'm just showing the ramifications of the views. If you reject atheism because theism, for whatever reason, seems more persuasive to you, if you think there is a God, where there are a whole bunch of other things that follow that are entailed by that notion, or at least theoretically entailed, there could be, in principle, a grounding for objective morality. Okay? If God himself is somehow the source of morality, then he becomes the place where morality is grounded that makes sense of our claims about morality out there in the objective world. Some things actually are right and wrong in themselves in virtue of the existence of God. And cashing that out can be done in a couple of different ways. But nevertheless, it's a grounding that provides sensibility to the notion of morality where atheism cannot do that. And I'm speaking here of objective morality. And therefore also the problem of evil. Because you cannot have a problem of evil unless you have the reality of good from which evil is a departure in the objective world, in the world in itself, mind independent, as it were. And so if it turns out that the reason that we have ideas about morality is because there really is a morality to have an idea about, well, that then fits only in a theistic worldview, objective morality. And I've argued these points before, but I'm just trying to give you a sense of entailment. Also, by the way, the idea of transcendent value or transcendent worth makes sense in a theistic worldview, makes no sense in the mechanistic universe with molecules in motion. It's not entailed in that case, but it is entailed, at least in principle, in a world where God exists. This is why the existence of God is the most important question, because it will take you in one of two directions of necessity about the kind of world we actually live in. Now, Richard Dawkins is an atheist, and as far as I can tell, he's a materialist. In other words, he's a metaphysical, materialist, naturalist, molecules in motion guy. These things outside of the natural order, like miracles, nonsense to him. I mean, absolute nonsense. The idea of a soul, the so-called ghost in the machine, nonsense. That phrase is offered pejoratively to describe theists' view of human beings. You're just a machine. That's it. You're a physical, wet machine. And you think there's a ghost in there, but there isn't. Consciousness is an illusion. Now, I don't know if Dawkins himself says that. Daniel Dennett, one of the other new atheists, holds that view. But there's not much you can do with consciousness if you can't reduce it to something physical, which it can't be done. If you're a materialist, you have to dismiss it as an illusion. And there are problems with that. I've talked about that before. I won't get into those details right now. But here is Richard Dawkins. And in this piece that I'm looking for the bib source here, appeared in Fox News Digital. All right. Headline, famous atheist says he identifies as a, quote, cultural Christian, close quote, and is, quote, horrified, close quote, by promotion of Islamic holiday. Subtitle here, Dawkins says he would choose Christianity over Islam every single time. All right. Now, this got my attention, of course, because Richard Dawkins is the world's most famous atheist, qua atheist. He's written many books trying to persuade people that belief in God is a delusion. It's in the title of one of his books, The God Delusion. But now he's making a reflection about the comparative merits of Christianity to Islam. And the merits, this is all brought to the fore because apparently Ramadan and Easter were on the same weekend. Now, Ramadan isn't a day, it's a period. It's a fasting period in Islam where people fast during the day. And they, as it turns out, and I was in Cairo during Ramadan, they eat like crazy when the sun's not up. In the morning before it comes up, and at night, it's party hardy. More food is sold during Ramadan, the month of fasting, than any other month. Do with that what you like. But in any event, apparently the mayor of London is a Muslim, and therefore what was front and center this last weekend, Easter weekend, and maybe the launch of Ramadan, was Ramadan and not Easter. Now that bothered Richard Dawkins. So here's what he has to say about this. And I want you, as I'm reading this, to be thinking about the concept of entailment, because that's a rational concept. It's something that is an important player in trying to make sense of beliefs that you have in light of what you claim the world is actually like. Okay? A famous atheist and evolutionary biologist, Richard Dawkins, I'm reading now from the piece, explained he identifies as a cultural Christian. That's his language right there. In an interview, after learning Ramadan lights were hung on a street in the UK as opposed to hanging lights to celebrate Easter. Dawkins was referring to Mayor of London Sadiq Khan turning on 30,000 lights for Ramadan, the Muslim holy month, on the cusp of Easter weekend on Oxford Street. Dawkins says, I must say, I'm slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. This was in an interview on Sunday. I feel that we are a Christian country. That's what he said. Now, interesting. So far, so good, somewhat, depending on how he means these things. If he says, I'm slightly horrified, he's speaking subjectively. I don't like one thing. I like the other thing more. Okay. And then he says, I feel that we are a Christian country. I'm not exactly sure how he defines a Christian country, but my suspicion is that he's speaking historically, that this country has been, UK in that particular case, has sprouted out of Western culture and essentially informed by a Christian worldview, which he does not agree with. I'll get to that in a moment. But nevertheless, has influenced the growth of European culture and England, and had a salutary effect, at least with regards, by comparison to Islam. So he says, I'm horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted because we are a Christian country, or so he feels. It's true that statistically, the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we substituted any alternative religion. That would truly be dreadful. Now, this is a very telling remark. At least initially for me, it was a little confusing. Do you mean that you're a cultural Christian because you like the religious architecture? And like in the Soviet Union, when communism took over 100 years ago, they destroyed churches or they turned churches into government buildings or something like that, and they lost all of that, you would be troubled in an aesthetic sense? Or do you mean more than that? No, I think he actually means more than that, though this is one thing he mentioned. If we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful churches, then, wow, that would be a bummer. And but why would that characterize him as a cultural Christian? A cultural Christian, I would imagine, is someone who believes in the cultural ramifications of Christianity and the existence of cathedrals and beautiful parish churches would be an example of that. But it seems to me he's not just talking about architecture. Then he goes on. He says, Dawkins said that if he had to choose between Christianity and Islam, he would choose Christianity, quote, every single time, close quote. So by comparison of these two religions, he's a much stronger advocate of Christianity. Now, he qualifies this. He says, it seems to me to be a fundamentally decent religion in a way that I think Islam is not. Now, here's where we come into a problem of entailment. What Dawkins is saying is that fundamentally, taken in general, there's some specific things that bug him, he'll mention in a moment, but generally speaking, it's a pretty decent religion. Islam, on the other hand, is not. Okay, here's the question. Where is he getting his standard by which he judges what is decent and indecent? Now, notice, I think these words are meant to, this word, decent, is meant to capture what he thinks is a moral category. This is decent like good, virtuous, not decent like pleasant to me. He might be speaking subjectively, but I actually don't think that's the case. Now, remember, his worldview is atheistic materialism, and he has been quoted many times, and by me even, and more than once, I think, in Street Smarts, when he says that this is a world, this is exactly the kind of world that you would expect to find if there was no God, a world in which there's no purpose, there is no design, there is no good, there is no evil, there is nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Now, those are his words. And that statement is a perfect characterization of materialistic, naturalistic atheism, which cannot entail anything like meaning and purpose and good and evil. It is indifferent. It is pitiless. You have spoken so well, Richard. But he's not speaking that way here. Now he says that he'd choose Christianity over Islam every single time because it's a fundamentally decent religion. Now, he says that Christianity is not so great about the way women are viewed in terms of female vicars and bishops, which they're not allowed to be female vicars and bishops. But he feels the holy books of Islam promote active hostility toward women, to which I respond, so what? So what if Christianity doesn't have such a great record with women, but Islam has a much worse record from women? What are you saying there, Professor Dawkins? You're saying that these are religions who are morally inferior in some way, but one is more inferior than the other. And it has to do with the way each one views women. Now, whether or not his assessment of, say, Christianity and women is accurate, and I don't think it is, you have to assess Christianity's characterization, the biblical characterization of the role of women in light of the culture at the time and in light of underlying theological realities. The underlying reality is there is neither male nor female. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free in the body of Christ. There is complete equality, which, by the way, was unheard of then. This was radical. However, there are differences in role. I'm the president of Stand to Reason. That means I'm in charge. The buck stops with me. Sometimes we count the votes. Sometimes we weigh the votes. And my vote weighs more because I'm the president. That doesn't mean I'm any more valuable than anybody else on our team. It just means that I have a different role, and mine is the final, ultimate decision maker because that's the way presidents work. There's a hierarchy, and the same thing is true in church and in families, according to Christianity, but is not meant in the slightest to diminish the value of any individual, Jew, Gentile, male, female, slave, or free. So that's the theological underpinning that we have to keep in mind. So he has not assessed Christianity, I think, accurately when he makes this criticism, modest criticism, because women aren't allowed in the Anglican system to be people of the cloth. But so what if you're an atheist? There's no evil, there's no good, there's no purpose, there's no just nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. That's the nature of the world. By your own words, Professor Dawkins. Where are you getting this moral category by which you condemn Christianity modestly, but by comparison Islam much more? Because, as he points out, the holy books of Islam promote active hostility to women. It's his view, okay? Now, he's clear to say, I'm not talking about individual Muslims who are, of course, all quite different. But the doctrines of Islam, the Hadith and the Quran, it's fundamentally hostile to women, hostile to gays. And I find that I like to live in a culturally Christian country, although I do not believe a single word of the Christian faith. Okay, now you've got him going another direction. Notice how his language relativizes his moral assessment. I like to live in a culturally Christian country, which I can understand that completely. But notice how there is conflicting tone here. And it's almost like there's a, shall we call it a, what's the phrase now? Cognitive dissonance that ought to be in play here. Is he really meaning that his concerns about Christianity towards women and especially Islam towards women and gays is just a matter of his personal feelings? Or does he actually believe, which I think is the case, that those things are wrong? And I partly say that because he's got a whole paragraph in the God Delusion in which he berates the God of the Bible for being patently immoral. And it's actually a tremendously written paragraph with all these different descriptive words. He's homophobic, he's misogynistic, he's this, that, the other thing. It's just almost poetic. But it makes no sense because those things are not entailed in the worldview that he says is true. And my question tactically is, Professor Dawkins, where are you getting your moral standard by which you are judging the God of the Bible? Now, I know where he gets it if you were to press him, and this is true with most atheists. You get it from Darwinian evolution. But Darwinian evolution can never make any kind of act wrong. It can only make you believe they're wrong to help you get your genes into the next generation, to use Dawkins's characterization. It can't make anything. Biology can't make rape wrong. Biology can't make murder wrong or genocide wrong or racism wrong or injustice wrong or anything wrong. It's just different, that's all. It can make us, in principle, believe that it's wrong, but it can't make the things wrong. So you're stuck with relativism. And sometimes he talks like a relativist even here. I like to live in a culturally Christian country, and sometimes it's not relativism, clearly, that's bleeding through. It is a conviction that there are right ways and wrong ways to treat women. And Christianity, in a more minor sense, and Islam in a more major sense, is guilty of mistreatment. Now, the comments, I continue here with the rest. I'm almost done with the article. The comments were a different tune than the one Dawkins took when he authored an infamous book called The God Delusion in 2006, where he ridiculed believers, including Christians. And then he adds, to be fair, much of the Bible is not systematically evil, but just plain weird. Do those people who hold up the Bible as an inspiration to moral rectitude have the slightest notion of what is actually written in it? Now, here he may be simply pointing at Christians who believe in moral rectitude and who hold up a Bible that seems to violate their own standards of moral rectitude. That would be a safe place for him to stand as an atheist. Well, whatever you guys are doing is contradictory. But it's clear that his view is that the Bible does violate standards of moral rectitude, those standards that he himself affirms, even though he has no right to them because those standards are not entailed in his atheism. He also called into question children identifying with the religious homes they were born into. He says, let children learn about different faiths. Let them notice their incompatibility, which is true. That's a great observation. All these faiths can't be true. They're incompatible with each other. And he says, let them draw their own conclusions about the consequences of that incompatibility. Now, I think my suspicion is that they are incompatible and the consequences are that they're all false and atheism is true. I don't know. He doesn't embellish that point. But as for whether they are valid, let them make up their own minds when they are old enough to do so. Now, this is so strange. I've heard lots of atheists say this. Oh, don't push your religion on people. Don't teach them your religious views. Just let them grow up and decide for themselves. Well, on the one hand, I mean, is this the way parenting works? Parents should not instill in the children any beliefs that the parents think are true, and the truth of those beliefs matters. Well, really? Dawkins is only saying that because he thinks they're all false. So let the kids believe whatever false beliefs they want. Don't you instill in them a false belief. What does it matter? If there's no morality, ultimately, about any of this, then why not force one's view on someone else? Why not indoctrinate your children to your false religion? What would be the principled complaint that is entailed in an atheistic worldview, Dr. Dawkins? So, and by the way, does he have the same perspective about science? Don't instill your own perspectives about science. Well, science, what's controversial about that? There's not an area of science that's not controversial among scientists. Even Darwinism. Stephen Jay Gould was an evolutionist, Harvard paleontologist. Richard Dawkins, Oxford biologist, evolutionist. They're at each other. They were at each other's throats until others' throats until what, 8-10 years ago, that Gould passed away. But they were at each other's throats. Why? Because they had different understandings about how Darwinian evolution played itself out. Dawkins was a fundamentalist when it comes to Darwinism, and Gould and others were what were called punctuated equilibrium. Long periods of equilibrium punctuated by rapid change followed by long periods of equilibrium. That's not Darwin. That's different than Darwin, but that's Dawkins. Well, okay, so should we just let kids believe whatever they want about science since there are differences of opinion? No. I don't think he's going to impose or suggest that same pedagogy with regards to science as he does with religion or, by the way, morality? Do you think kids should decide whether it's okay to abuse women or not? I mean, that's what his concern was in Christianity in part, and certainly in Islam. Why should we teach them otherwise? Let the kids decide. Well, you can see that's silly. We teach kids what we think is true, and hopefully we're going to teach them why we think it's true. And when they get older, look, they are certainly capable of making assessments on their views and changing their minds. It happens all the time. My main point here is entailment. You listen to atheists, and if you're aware of what atheism, a naturalistic, materialistic metaphysic about the nature of reality, cannot entail as a philosophy, then pay attention to when atheists talk as if they're theists, riding on a theistic worldview, borrowing from our view. Frank Turek wrote a book on this issue called Stealing from God. Well, then it's fair to ask some questions and point that out. Wait a minute, I'm confused. And this to me is a great bridge comment into a question. I'm confused. What do you mean? What are you confused about? Well, you're an atheist, right? Yeah, well, now you're talking about what's good or evil regarding treating women. Where does that come out of atheism? Oh, well, that comes out of my evolution. Oh, well, maybe these people who are treating women worse than you would treat them evolved differently than you. So what is the basis of your complaint then, if they evolve differently, because evolution is the only thing? Anyway, you see where I'm going with that. All right, friends, let's take a break and then to your calls after that.
Have you seen our brand new website? Stop by str.org and enjoy a fresh, clean layout with all the same great content. The new Stand to Reason website was designed with you in mind. It has an easier than ever navigation and a crisp, simple layout so you can find all the sound analysis and careful commentary that you've come to expect from us. Browse new features that make finding your favorite resources easier than ever. As always, it's our goal to equip you, our fellow Christians, with the confidence, clear thinking, and courage you need for every encounter you have as a Christian ambassador. Our new website is just one way we're fulfilling that goal, allowing you to access the resources you need in a new and improved way. So visit str.org and keep coming back to discover new podcasts, articles, and videos each and every day.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible content each week? We rely on generous donors so that we can provide you with the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including our apps, blog posts, articles, and short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. Just visit str.org/donate to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources for more than 27 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Help us continue by making a financial gift today at str.org/donate.
All right. Dear Julie, if you're anywhere in our listening universe right now, Amy apologizes profusely for pushing the button and losing you, and please come back. Come home. That was an accident. Now, usually it's me pushing the wrong button. In this case, it was Miss Hall that pushed the wrong button. So, Julie, we'd love to have you back on board. And characteristically, just as a general thing, if you are on board, if Amy or has talked to you and you're ready or whatever, I mean, you made it in, and all of a sudden things go dead, it's probably our fault. And it would probably be my fault. Not Amy's, but once in a while, she's the culprit. So if it happens, you just call back and we'll put you back in the queue. All right, let's go then first to Tim in Abbotsford, Canada. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hey, gotcha.
Hi. thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, yeah, I've been wanting to call for a long time, but, you know, life gets busy, and with four kids, it's just...
That's okay. You're here now.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy I called. It's just funny. My wife called me at 4, and she's like, let's go to the park with our one kid. And I said, sure. And I'm like, I can still call him from there in the car or something, but then I mean, that's probably not going to work, so I called her back and said, I'm just going to stay home.
Okay, so what's on your mind, Tim?
Oh, quite a bit. But first, I just got some words of affirmation I want to give you from a call you took a while ago about a guy calling in saying his wife called him dumb. I don't know if you remember that call.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned, you said three words in there. You said marriage is hard. And my heart just melted. And I just started crying because just to hear those coming from you, it meant a lot because marriage is hard. And especially being a blended marriage, which I am in, I would say it's almost harder, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just meant a lot hearing those three words from you. It caused me a lot of sorrow, but good sorrow.
Well, there's a lot of people can relate to that phrase, marriage is hard, because it just is. Sometimes easier than others for some folks. Sometimes the seasons are different, but I have found that it is and not just in my own life, but observing others and reading books about it, that it is the most significant surgical tool that God uses to form our personalities to be more like what he wants, more like Christ. Because it's such a sharp surgical tool. But what's on your mind, Tim? You had a question about morality, right?
It kind of ties in what you were talking about. Some of my friends, my one friend doesn't believe in God, but he still thinks there's evil stuff out there, or right and wrong. And I was thinking, how can you call it right or wrong if you don't believe in God? And I was just wondering, a good question, how to phrase the question properly to ask him that. Where did you get that?
Sure. I go over this in Street Smarts. I don't know if you have the book, but
I've read it, and I've got to read it again because I forget easily.
Although, I wrote it and I forget, so no worries there. But the issue here, and this is where sometimes you need to stretch your questions out instead of going right to the end. You got to take little bitty steps. And that's what I try to role model in Street Smarts and the dialogues that I've included in the chapters here. People say things are, well, that's wrong or that's evil. And that's when I say, well, wait, I'm a little confused. Well, what do you mean? Well, you're an atheist, right? Yeah, of course I'm an atheist. Well, you said that their behaviors were wrong. Yeah, of course. Well, tell me what you mean when you said their behavior is wrong. Now, there's only two real possibilities here, Tim. And one possibility is they don't like it. In other words, to them personally, it's unpleasant. So, I mean, think about eating Brussels sprouts or something like that. I mean, I think they're disgusting, but so many people like them nowadays. They're on every menu.
I love them.
Yeah, or liver, or I don't know, think of something, whatever. You know, when I say Brussels sprouts are bad, I'm not referring to a more quality. I'm referring to my tastes or my preferences. But, you know, you can't complain that God made Brussels sprouts, right? Just because you don't happen to like the flavor. A lot of people are rejoicing that Brussels sprouts exist and you can buy them now at any restaurant, okay?
Yeah.
Now, or they might be saying the thing itself should not have taken place. When I say it was wrong, I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm saying that the thing itself was wicked or evil. Okay. Now that's the difference between relativism, the first one, or objectivism, the second. However you use questions to kind of make these distinctions is up to you. But this is where I'm going to try to flush this out. And all we're doing at this point is trying to understand their view. That's all we're doing at this point. Okay.
Yep.
Trying to make sense of their view. And, once we get a clear picture, as I mentioned a few moments ago, if they're atheist, there is no possibility of making sense of objective morality. I mean, some people, you find philosophers that have made attempts at it, but they don't work, the ones that I've seen, and I don't think there are any that really work. But your rank and file isn't working that hard to make sense, because what they are doing is they're seeing something that actually is wicked, that they know is wicked because they're made in the image of God and they live in God's world. Yet the concept of any act being wicked is not entailed by their atheism. So they're living in a contradiction. They're talking and living in a contradiction, and many times they don't realize it, and this is what our questions are meant to help them see. Wait a minute, I'm confused. So are you saying you don't like those things? And if that's all you're saying, why should anybody care? Or are you saying those things are wicked in themselves? Okay. And then when you say, if you say they're wicked in themselves, you must be referring to some kind of standard of good and bad, something that ought to be the case and this isn't. You ought to be nice people, and you're not nice, you're mean. So therefore, that's wicked. But where did the ought come from? Now, this is where there can be a misunderstanding. And oftentimes, when you ask people where did they get their standard, they're going to answer a different question without realizing it. They're going to say, well, it's just obvious. It's just obvious that that's wrong. But now they've answered a different question. You didn't ask them, how do they know something is wrong? You asked them, where did they get the standard? And this is where I use an illustration in Street Smarts, and I say, you can know what the speed limit is by looking at the sign, but that isn't what creates the speed limit. The sign doesn't create the speed limit. It announces the speed limit. Yeah. It was the government that is the appropriate source of speed limits that is responsible for the limit. That's where it came from, and that's the question we're asking. We're not asking them how do they know it. We're asking where did this come from. But if in a universe, if you had a universe of just molecules in motion, of course, there's no proper answer to that. There's no adequate answer to that. It doesn't come from anywhere. Well, if it doesn't come from anywhere, then it ain't there. Why is it you're acting like if it's real, if there's no place it could come from?
Yeah.
And so that's the tension that I want to put them in. You're acting as if something like Christian theism is true, but then you're denying it's true.
Yeah.
You know, I had Justin Brierley on, I guess it was before Christmas, it was a few months back. Justin, the former host.
You heard
that interview?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. So the book he's written recently is called The Surprising Rebirth of Belief in God. And, and he's just pointing out that there's a whole lot of people like Tom Holland and, who's the other guy I was thinking of, Douglas Murray, that are, you know, coming from an atheistic perspective, but are realizing, wait, everything they believe is valuable. Really fits in a Christian worldview, not in an atheistic worldview. It almost sounded like Richard Dawkins was saying something kind of like that in the article I was citing. So so that's the issue. That's the difficulty. That's the problem. You know, when people are talking about right and wrong, they almost always, especially if they're upbraiding somebody, hey, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't cut in line. You shouldn't, you know, you gave your word and then you went back on it. You didn't pay me what you owed me, on and on and on and on and on. These are people that are talking about morality as if it's real.
Yeah, they're stealing from God.
Yeah, and this is something, of course, C.S. Lewis does a marvelous job of articulating in the first few chapters of Mere Christianity. And he starts with the moral argument for the existence of God. It's just brilliant the way he does it. But it's a standard argument. And as I made reference to Francis Schaeffer just a bit ago, I've learned a lot from Schaeffer back in the 80s, you know, when 70s and 80s when I read his books. He died in the late 80s, I believe. But he said human beings are made in the image of God. That's just the fact of the matter. And they have to live in the world that God made. So even when Richard Dawkins is proclaiming the doctrine of atheistic materialism when he says there is no purpose, there's no meaning, there is no evil, there's no good, there's nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. He certainly is speaking accurately of what's involved with atheism, but at the same time, he can't live that way because he's a human being made in the image of God, and God actually does exist. And this stuff that's on the inside that God has built into him and every human being has got to come out in some fashion on the outside. And yeah. I call that the inside-out tactic, and of course it's in the tactics book. But so anyway, there's a little more detailed tutorial about how to navigate that circumstance. People are saying, the way the summary Amy put for me here of your question is, how can a person say something is right or wrong if they don't believe in God? And the simple answer is, the reason they can say it is because there is a right and wrong, and they know better, even though they have a false belief about God.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, Tim. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care.
God bless.
Thank you. Bye. Let's see, just a few more minutes to go, and I have not done my announcements for this show, which show comes out tomorrow and the next one on Friday. So I wanted to let you know about something that's happening on Friday that you need to know about. That is the last day of reduced cost for the next and the final of this season, Reality, coming up in Augusta, Georgia, April 19 and 20. Now, there's a few more weeks until the event, of course, but the tickets are on sale now at a discount, $59. Now, that's not the early bird discount. It was cheaper, but those of you who waited, it's just going to cost you more. That's okay. It's bargain at twice the price. Trust me. On Friday, the last day for $59, Saturday jumps up 10 bucks. It's still a bargain. You're going to get your money's worth for a wonderful weekend, Friday and Saturday, April 19th and 20th, in Augusta, Georgia. And the final event in our season here for Reality, man or maker? That's the question. Man or maker? Who says who you are? This entire event is talking about identity. And it's hard to imagine, especially for young people, what could be a more critical question to answer. And lots of young people are deeply confused because the culture is screaming nonsense. But it's screaming it loudly, it's screaming it persuasively with a lot of rhetoric, and it's punishing those who don't listen and obey. And so it shakes up young people. This has to do with sexuality more than anything else. Right now, gender, etc. But in a more broad sense, the gender issue, choose what you want, is because there's a larger issue at stake. The man's idea of identity, that is that we make up our own identity. You do you. And that's the issue that's taken on in this event. And it actually does speak to the issues of entailment, what I've just been describing this hour. That if it turns out that human beings are the ones who describe the nature of reality, there is no God, it's man that makes up whatever he wants, that has certain natural consequences. You follow those ideas out to their natural end and you get a mess, which is what we have in our culture today. But it doesn't sound that way when people say, you do you, man. It's a Coke commercial. One of the presentations included it. There it was. Hey, you do you. That's great. Whatever you want. That's what it's all about. The problem, of course, is when the person who says you do you has somebody else doing whatever they like to that person that person doesn't like. You can't have a whole culture just pursuing their own interests because those interests collide with each other. And this creates chaos and all kinds of nonsense. How can you have justice if everybody's just doing whatever they want to do? Or even if they are just pursuing their own identities, the way they want to identify. I mean, maybe some people don't identify with the social justice, the so-called social justice movement, okay? Anyway, I'm kind of getting off the track. The point is, this is all covered. Friday night, all day Saturday, it's a fantastic event. We've got all our standard speakers there for Stand to Reason. We've got Christopher Yu on. We have Sean McDowell. We have the Tripp and Megan Almond. They're all added in. We have Lanesh Garrison. We have Drew Worsham doing unbelievable things. Now, he's an illusionist, not a magician, not a sorcerer, just a trickster. But what he does is amazing. And then he folds it all into the whole event, so you have a magnificent weekend. To get the details for Reality Student Apologetics, the last one of this season in Georgia, Augusta, April 19th and 20th, just go to realityapologetics.com. Realityapologetics.com. Incidentally, if you were not able to attend and wanted to, the Dallas event that we had like 2 months ago, that was a fabulous event. I think there were 27 or 2,800 students in there, just totally jammed the venue. All of that was live streamed. And so if you go to realityapologetics.com, you're going to find the details there for purchasing the live stream for you individually, for a group, for your church, however it works. There are different prices for it. But if you can't make the live event, please get the live stream. It's going to make a huge difference for you and your young people, okay? It's a great event. Hope to see you there April 19th and 20th if you're within striking distance of Augusta, Georgia, for the final Reality Student Apologetics Conference of this year. Who says who you are, man or maker? That's the question, and we answer it then. All right, friends, thank you for spending this hour with me. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven. Bye-bye now.